Blog Talk Radio.
YouTube comments. No, you know what it is? I mean, I don't know. I guess I have thin skin. I would, if you asked me before, I probably would have said I have thick skin, but I guess I have thin skin because, like, 97% of the comments will be, like, really nice, and or they'll just be adding smart points, and then, like, 3% of them will be like, oh, you're fucking liberal. You're fucking liberal bullshit. Liberal. You're a liberal, damn it. And I'll hone in on that like a fucking hawk, and I'm like, I must respond, and I, like, I'm so naive and silly because I act like, well, if I respond with logic, I'll change this person's mind. Oh, that's adorable, like logic will change people's mind. If that was the case, I mean, there wouldn't be Republicans and there wouldn't be religious people, but they both exist, so apparently we're fighting a losing battle here, but we're gonna keep fighting because what the fuck else is there to do? But anyway, so yeah, I went in a little bit yesterday when it comes to the YouTube comments, but I have a great show lined up for you guys today. I got some stuff on, drone policy, something I didn't know. Obama was planning on doing something that's positive. It was a step in the right direction. I didn't know about it, but it doesn't really make any difference now because he's going back on that thing. So he's like, I'm going to do something good. Never mind. JK, move along. So we'll talk about that. We also have another UN report out on the situation in Israel-Palestine, and the UN's not fucking around. They're saying to Israel very clearly, hey, you know those settlement things? No. How about that? How about you stop with that? I'll give you some quotes and some details on that. Of course, the main issue, we can't fucking escape it, man. I mean, I tried to limit the number of Dylan Roof stories and Confederate flag stories to, like, 3 or 4. Failed miserably. We have, God, probably, like, 6. Now, it's all about different aspects, and it's different commentators weighing in on it and different discussions and whatnot, but still, I wanted to limit it more, but I couldn't because the stories were just too – I felt like I had to bring them up. And then later on in the show, if we have time for this, the final story that we'll do, really interesting study on gender roles, and I can't say it wasn't predictable because it kind of was, but at the same time, it's pretty sad. Like, what happens when – a man perceives that he's more feminine, and he thinks that other people think he's feminine. What does he do? And vice versa. What does a woman do when she thinks that people view her as masculine? I don't want to give it away too much right now, but you could probably guess. It's a logical reaction. But anyway, so let's save that. Let's go ahead and get started, though, and kick it off here with drones. There's a fascinating article in the Huffington Post today by Ali Watkins detailing how President Obama went back on a promise that he made about drones. So 2 years ago, at a speech at the National Defense University, he promised to take the drone program out of the hands of the CIA. And his reasoning was, well, with the CIA, it's covert and it's totally unaccountable. And what he wanted to do was at least have more light on it and more transparency and bring it to the Pentagon. And there, you know, he would have more direct control, and there would just be more layers of oversight to make sure that there aren't as many screw-ups. Because as we've covered before, it was the CIA drones that were responsible for example, blowing up a grandma who was picking vegetables in Pakistan. And then afterwards they always go, whoop, they blew up a wedding procession that they thought was a Taliban procession. Again, their response was, whoops. So Obama, I mean, in this respect, at least to a certain extent, he tried to do the right thing and have a better process and more oversight. And that was his goal, to take it from the CIA and bring it to the Pentagon. But today we learn this, quote, although the CIA and the Pentagon have both backed the new plan, lawmakers aren't convinced that the two bureaucracies, each of which has long charged that the other isn't qualified to manage the drone program, can finally cooperate. Here's a quote. The White House was almost laughed out of the room, said an official in the June 10th briefing. It was just totally unworkable. It was dual command. That was not what the president's direction was. So he went from saying, and I missed this at the time, so that was wrong of me. I should have caught this at the time, but I didn't. Obama went from saying, okay, no more CIA control, and I would have given him credit at the time if I knew that he said that. He went from that to, okay, the CIA can share control with the Pentagon. So it was a slight, like, okay, everybody's against me in the establishment. I guess I have to find some sort of a middle ground. I mean, I really shouldn't have to compromise on this issue. My original position was to compromise, but now I guess I'll compromise more. I love the next line. They say, quote, the first source said that although the White House publicly implied it wanted to end the CIA's drone program, that was never a realistic objective. So Huffington Post is speaking to insiders in the administration, a source that has anonymity in this case, and the source is like, everybody in the room told him, Mr. President, be serious. What, really? You're going to stop this drone program the way it works right now? Get real. So think about that. The most powerful man in the world wants to change the way we do drone strikes in a better direction. So again, credit to him for the idea originally. And the system says to him, the establishment says to him, all the people in the room that have the badges on and the other people who are advisors who have the suits and ties, they go, I don't think so. We're not going to do that. So Obama's advisors and the establishment and the CIA pulled rank on Obama, and they were like, heel. Oh, you want to change this drone program because we're doing what? Killing civilians? Sit down and shut up. The best we'll do is maybe we'll share. We'll do CIA and Pentagon working together. But here's the most ominous part. Quote, the same factor that caused Obama to want to take the drone program away from the CIA may be part of the reason the agency is holding on to it. As covert operations, the agency's drone strikes aren't subject to the same international laws and domestic oversight as the Pentagon's. Oh, I see what they're doing here. They think they're being cute and using a legal loophole where they say, okay, well, a drone strike is an act of war. Let's call it what it is. We haven't declared war in these different places. We're not authorized to be in these different places. So we can't have the Pentagon, you know, do it, because then you'll need Congress to get involved and you actually will have oversight. So what we'll do is we'll have the CIA do it and we'll act like, hey, look at that, no harm, no foul, not violating international law or the Constitution or the Geneva Conventions. Well, I would say to them, you absolutely are. They think that by doing like a bureaucratic trick that they could turn around to the world and go, ah, see, we follow international law. And then, you know, America always points their finger at other people and go, why are you not following international law? Bitch, you're not following it either. You're just pretending like you're not following it because you said instead of this agency doing the drone strikes, this other one's doing it, so it doesn't count as a war crime. My ass cheeks. Again, imagine for a second China or Iran decides, we're just going to attack what we heard is a neo-Nazi enclave in northern Florida. There was one there recently, by the way. It just got busted up. But we're going to attack a sovereign citizens group. We're going to attack, you know, in South Carolina, the one of the 19 hate groups, the terror groups that are there that spread white supremacy. Imagine China or Iran said, we're just going to drone them. What's the big deal? Whatever. And then they say, it's not an act of war. We didn't just do an act of war. What are you talking about? We used our an agency that doesn't have to abide by international law. It's not our military that did it. It was a different agency. Therefore, America can't get mad. America can't say that they've been attacked. America can't say it was an act of war. America can't say it was a war crime. Everybody sit down and shut up. That's what we do. But since we do it with countries that nobody gives a flying fuck about, we act like it's better. Oh, we did it in Pakistan. We did it in Yemen. We did it in Somalia. So who gives a fuck? Who gives a fuck? It's irrelevant. Nobody cares about them anyway. So when we kill a wedding procession or we blow up a funeral that has women and children at it or we blow up a grandma who's picking vegetables, whatever, son. And then when the president at least means well and tries to change the oversight that you have there, they say, no, we're not even going to do that. And then Obama, in his infinite weakness, goes, well, the establishment seems pretty sure of themselves. I guess I have to buckle and just turn it over to them and let them do whatever they want. And that's what he did. He went from, okay, got to get out of the CIA's hands, to they tell me I can't, okay, let's share it. And the indication and the implication, I should say, in the article is that's not really going to happen either. Because those agencies, the CIA and the Pentagon, hate each other. They hate each other. So here we are, right back at square one. We set up this monstrosity of a system, and now we can't even, like, minorly change it to make it somewhat better. Can't even do that. You know, you started the ball rolling when it comes to ignoring the Constitution and ignoring international law. You know, it started after World War II, when we basically became the world's biggest superpower, and we started acting like it, brazenly violating international law and whatnot. It started then, and then it's gotten worse and worse ever since, and it went into hyperdrive during the Bush administration. And then Obama comes in, and, you know, it's not like he's started to dismantle this stuff. NSA spying is still horrendous. They pretend like they're going to fix it. They don't really do anything to fix it. They pretend like they're going to dismantle it. They don't do anything to dismantle it. You know, war in Afghanistan, war in Iraq, still going on. Syria. Now there's another one that we added to it. And again, we're continuing the drone strikes. And even when he tries to slightly change it, okay, step in the right direction just a tad to only violate international law in a slightly less bad way, they go, no, we're going to continue doing it the way we're doing it right now. The inefficient, ineffectual way where we have a higher civilian casualty rate and we're unaccountable. Yay, America! Okay. Oh, boy. Starting off on a downer. Now we're going to move to another downer. So yesterday, we discussed the UN report on the recent Gaza war, which found that both sides likely committed war crimes. And of course, we condemned both sides. So Hamas came out and said, I don't know what they're talking about. We didn't attack civilian populations. And the UN is like, yes, you did. Who do I believe? Of course I believe the UN. I think they're right. And I think Hamas is dead wrong for attacking civilian populations. I mean, it's immoral. It's unjust, it's criminal, and it's counterproductive. So we're clear about that. Now, also in the UN report, they said, okay, let's face it, Israel as well targeted schools, they targeted hospitals, they basically mowed down civilians. Well, the entire time they say, like, oh, no, we care deeply. We dropped some pamphlets here and there, and that makes everything all good. And the UN basically said, no. I mean, the time frame, for example, when they drop a pamphlet that says, hey, we're going to bomb here, get out, the time frame sometimes was like 2 minutes. People are like, what the fuck's going on? Oh, shit, and then the bombs drop. And again, the civilian casualty rate is very telling, and that's what the UN says, that 2,200 people are dead, depending on whether you believe investigative journalists or the UN. Between 60 and 80% of them were civilians. 500 children died. So they said very clearly, yeah, Israel, you also committed war crimes. Stop fucking who you think you're fooling here. You shouldn't have done that. So we're crystal clear, okay? We condemn on both sides the war crimes, you know, the violence targeted at civilians and just the violence across the board should stop, and we should find a different way to try to fix this situation. Well, that was the report that came out a few days ago or about a week ago. Now we have a new report. This one is about the Israeli settlements in the West Bank. This one, they are not saying, hey, the blame is more 50-50, and let's talk about it from that angle. The Guardian reports the following, quote, Israel must withdraw all settlers from the West Bank or potentially face a case at the International Criminal Court for serious violations of international law. All settlement activity in occupied territory must cease without preconditions, and Israel must immediately initiate a process of withdrawal of all settlers, said the UN Human Rights Council. Israel, it said, was in violation of Article 49 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which forbids the transfer of civilian populations to occupied territory. They continue. They say the settlements were leading to a creeping annexation that prevents the establishment of a contiguous and viable Palestinian state and undermines the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. According to the report on settlements, Israel has established around 250 settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem since 1967, home to more than 500,000 Israeli citizens. The settlements impede Palestinian access to water resources and agricultural lands. Following the Palestinians' upgrade to non-member state status, the Israeli government announced a fresh wave of settlement building, including the development of a highly sensitive swath of land east of Jerusalem, known as E1. So let's understand this completely. As you have Netanyahu sometimes saying, oh, I'm for peace, half the time he says, no, I'm not in favor of a Palestinian state, and I'll never be. And the other half the time he says, oh, no, I'm totally on the side of peace. I mean, absolutely, for sure. So half the time he's saying, let's do a peace deal. What he's actually doing is, I'm going to annex more land. I am going to take it. Think about how ridiculous that is, because it's the old saying, actions speak louder than words, and his actions are taking the land, and he's not fooling the UN. The UN is like, dude, come on, look at what you're doing, you're taking more land as you're saying, maybe sometimes, not really, but sometimes we'll work towards a peace deal at some point in the future. Even Obama said recently on Israeli TV, he's like, yeah, even when Netanyahu says, let's do a peace deal, he always says, well, come on, we're a little busy now. I mean, I got to clean the backyard out, and I got to do some dusting in my house, maybe some vacuuming. But then after that, maybe at some date I'm not going to mention down the future, then maybe we'll start to have a conversation about that. So it's clear what he's doing. And here comes the fuck you from the government, too. In an official statement, the Israeli Foreign Ministry said, quote, counterproductive measures, this is directed at the UN, such as the report before us, will only hamper efforts to find a sustainable solution to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. The Human Rights Council has sadly distinguished itself by its systematically one-sided and biased approach towards Israel. This latest report is yet another unfortunate reminder of that. So they do this report where they give facts, and then they say, okay, you stop, you're violating international law. And what's Israel's response? Biased! You are so biased against Israel. What do you mean biased? What does that mean, biased? Biased in what sense? No, but you see, this is a trick, because what they're trying to do is say, like, well, the histories are 50-50, so you got to do blame 50-50. But the history is not 50-50. You are occupying them. They are not occupying you. So when they say, hey, you can't stop doing settlements, it doesn't make sense for them to say, and those Palestinians should stop doing settlements. But they're not doing settlements. That wouldn't make any sense if they say the Palestinians stop doing settlements. No, it's gotten to the point where it's just comical. It's almost like the Likud party has already prepared all these statements that they're going to give. Whenever the UN or anybody else condemns them for what they're doing, they just revert right back to their playbook and pull out the same statements. Okay, biased, counterproductive, yada, yada. If they want a deal, they have to sit face-to-face with us, and then we'll figure it out. And that's the other thing they do. So when Hamas does violence, they go, well, you're not going to get a state that way. We're not going to give it to you. We're more powerful than you, and what you're doing is wrong. By the way, they're right about that one. But the idea is, oh, you do violence? Well, then you can't get a state that way, so stop. And then they sit face-to-face with the Palestinians, and then they go, well, we're not going to give you a state. And then the Palestinians go to the UN, and then Israel goes, how dare you go to the UN? That's anti-Semitic, and we're not going to give you a state if you go through that way either. Then they go to the International Criminal Court, and they go, oh, how dare you go to the International Criminal Court? We're not going to do a state that way. Come and sit face-to-face with us. Then they come and sit face-to-face, and they go, well, we're not going to give you a state. Like, what the fuck do you want them to do? What do you want them to do? But that's the thing. At this point, Netanyahu and Likud and the further right-wing parties, they're just playing a game. They know what they're going to say. They know that they're not in favor of a Palestinian state, and they're just the international community, they're fucking with them at this point. You know, and President Obama and the U.S., they're the ones that need to wake the fuck up. Do you want peace or do you not want peace? If you want peace, you know what you're going to have to do? Make Israel be a player in peace. They're not going to do it willingly. Netanyahu is not going to do it willingly. So what do you do to make them do it? It's very simple. Number one, lift your veto. That's it. So everybody else in the world virtually is like, yeah, we could do a Palestinian state. That makes sense. The only people virtually who are not in favor of it, the U.S. and Israel. All the U.S. has to do is say, yeah, we're no longer on that side. Let's do a Palestinian state. Boom. There's one huge thing right there. Stop giving billions of dollars in subsidies to Israel. There's another thing. That'd be wonderful. And by the way, you don't even need to agree with me on this issue to be on that page. I mean, why would we give money to them anyway? Why would we give money to Egypt? Why would we give money to any of these countries? It doesn't make any sense to me. But that's another thing that you could do. Also, look, the BDS movement is the right approach to fix the situation because it's not violence. It's boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. So you hurt them economically to get them to say, to get the elite to say, dude, we can't take this anymore. We're losing money. We're losing our livelihood. This isn't acceptable. We need to do something to try to fix this. Well, how do you fix this? A peace deal, a Palestinian state. Let's get to the 1967 borders. Let's build a giant wall that split up Jerusalem. And then let's start the process of depropagandizing both populations, where Palestinians don't grow up thinking that all Jews are evil, and people in Israel don't grow up thinking that, well, come on, these guys are savages anyway, so they deserve what they have coming. Who cares if we continue the occupation? They're better off under our occupation anyway than they are under Hamas, which, be honest, is what a lot of these people think. So you have to – it's not going to – when you have one group that's not a partner in peace, they're not a partner in peace, then what do you have to do? You have to make them be a partner in peace. And understand, I know there's extremists on both sides. What I'm saying is you weed them out as much as possible and you find the people who are in favor of peace on both sides and you make it work. Okay? There's going to be people in Hamas. There's going to be some Palestinians who will never give up right to return. Well, guess what? They're not going to get that. And they're going to have to fucking deal with that. Okay? There's going to be a compromise here. By the same token, there's a lot of Israelis who say, we want all the land. Okay, well, you're not going to get that either. Hamas isn't going to get what they want. The far right in Israel isn't going to get what they want. And that's fine. More moderate level heads will prevail, but we need to sit down and make this deal happen. As of right now, Israel has more power in the region. That's clear. That's utterly clear. And the U.S. backs Israel much, much more. So what you have to do is the U.S. has to step up. The U.N. has to step up. And we have to say, look, it's time you do it. Or else you're going to feel the pain economically. Okay. Let me do one more here. This will be the marijuana story, and then we'll take our first break. There's a new study out in the Journal of General Internal Medicine conducted by researchers at Harvard Medical School and Hunter College, and it looked into whether or not immigrants – oh, wait, hold on. Do I want to do this one? Where the fuck is the weed one? Sorry, guys. I thought that was the weed story, and it's the immigration story. Okay, sorry. Here we go. I got it. I like how I caught myself when I had already started that story. Okay. So now you know later you have an immigration story to look forward to. Anyway, over the weekend, the New England Conference of United Methodist Churches, which represents 600 congregations, voted for a resolution that calls for a complete end to the drug war. So here's what they say. Quote, In the love of Christ, who came to save those who are lost and vulnerable, we urge the creation of a genuinely new system for the care and restoration of victims, offenders, criminal justice officials, and the community as a whole. Restorative justice grows out of a biblical authority which emphasizes a right relationship with God, self, and community. When such relationships are violated or broken through crime, opportunities are created to make things right. So this is actually a pretty big deal because, again, the United Methodist Churches represents 600 congregations. That's a lot. And as we know, whether or not we like it, the reality is that this group has probably a significant amount of political clout just by raw numbers. And when they come out and say, we're in favor of, you know, medical treatment for drug abuse instead of jail time, that may have an impact. See, what you're seeing now is a lot of more or less mainstream groups and societies are now saying, yeah, now we've taken what was the formerly radical position on marijuana and we're on that page now. So like we covered recently, I think some polls are as high as 60% now in terms of favorability for legalization of marijuana in the United States. Okay, we're not talking about like a controversial issue anymore, guys. We're talking about an issue where 60% in some cases of the American people say, just legalize it. Not even, hey, decriminalize it. Not even, like, do treatment for people with drug abuse. Legalize it. So the snowball effect is happening right now, and we're pretty far along in that process, and it's only going to continue. So, of course, I can't get through this segment without bringing up, though, I find just religious groups in general weighing in on anything is so silly to me. Because it's like, we, on behalf of our imaginary friend that doesn't exist, but we like to pretend that imaginary friend exists, we would like to say that our imaginary friend now has switched sides on this and is in favor of doing the right thing. Well, I wish you could just say that, hey, it's my opinion based on logic and rationality, and I came to this conclusion, and that's why we're on this page. But they have to play like the voodoo, metaphysical, dogmatic bullshit game along with it, and that part pisses me off, but that's just me being bitter and angry that more people aren't secular and aren't atheists. But either way, I mean, I'd rather have somebody who I disagree with on the bigger issue of religion, but somebody who still comes to the right policy position than somebody who's religious and is on the wrong policy side. That goes without saying. So I may not agree with how they came to this conclusion. I may not agree with what their reasoning is, or lack thereof reasoning is, but at least they're on the right side, which means we can move forward and try to get the right policy regardless of other differences. So with that being said, you give them credit. They did the right thing here. Let's take a break. When we come back, oh boy, we're going to jump into it. Dylan Roof, Confederate flag, more stuff from more commentators. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there. We'll be right back. La, 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 la. She said, don't you worry if I disappear. I told her I'm not really looking for another mistake. I called an old friend thinking that the trouble would wait. But then I jumped right in a week later, returned. I reckon she was only looking for a lover to burn. But I gave her my time for 2 or 3 nights. Then I put it on pause until the moment was right. I went away 4 months until our paths crossed again. She told me I was never looking for a friend. Maybe you could swing by my room around 10. Bring the lemon and a bottle of gin. We'll be in between the sheets till the late a.m. Baby, if you wanted me, then you should have just said she's singing. La, don't die when my love, that heart is so cold. Weeks, I only want to see her. We drink away the days with a takeaway pizza. Before, a text message was the only way to reach her. Now she's staying at my place and loves the way I treat her. Singing out Aretha all over the track like a feature. And never wants to sleep, I guess that I don't want to either. But me and her, we make money the same way. 4 cities, 2 planes the same day.
and those shows have never been what it's about. Maybe we'll go together and just figure it out. I'd rather put on a film with you and sit on the couch, but we should get on a plane or we'll be missing it now. Wish I'd have written it down, the way that things played out. When she was kissing him, how I was confused about. Now she should figure it out while I'm sat here singing.
La, la, don't la, la, when my love, that heart is so cold.
Trust and respect is what we do this for. I never intended to be next, but you didn't need to take him to bed, that's all. And I never saw him as a threat until you disappeared with him to have sex, of course. It's not like we were both on tour. We were staying at the same hotel floor. And I wasn't looking for a promise or commitment, but it was never just fun, and I thought you were different. This is not the way you realize what you wanted. It's a bit too much, too late, if I'm honest. And all this time, God knows, I'm singing.
I love, don't know when my love, that heart is so cold.
Back, guys, we're back. I'll have to do my best to not lose it a little bit in this next segment. Okay, you ready to be angry? Daily Beast has a shocking report out today on the group that fueled Dylann Roof's terrorism in Charleston. It turns out the Council of Conservative Citizens, as it's called, is a, quote, white nationalist group subsidized by American taxpayers. So the group that this guy got his racist ideology from, the group that he says opened his eyes to the problem, this is a group that gets money from you and me. Okay, how could this have happened? They say, quote, the Council of Conservative Citizens is listed by the Internal Revenue Service as a nonprofit organization that promotes social welfare, also known as a 501c4. Because, you know, getting rid of those blacks, that would be social welfare. Such groups pay no federal taxes, a form of government subsidy. All right, here's the real IRS scandal. Republicans were looking for an IRS scandal that didn't exist. Well, here's one that actually exists. Remember what their argument was. They said, well, the government is only cracking down on conservative groups, so they're discriminating, so this is a huge story, let's all get outraged about it. But then if you actually read the articles on it, you find out very quickly they actually scrutinize liberal groups more. And any scrutiny that any Tea Party group was under, they still ended up getting whatever status they wanted. They all got status as social welfare groups, whereas some liberal groups did not. So if anything, the real scandal is they were harder on liberals. No, but it's just conservatives were angry because the government or the IRS dared to take two looks at groups that were Tea Party groups that were openly against taxes. Groups where the leaders of the group said stuff like, I want there to be no federal taxes. The IRS was like, well, maybe we should look and make sure they're paying their taxes and doing the right thing. And conservatives went, how dare you? How irrational are you? For fuck's sake, that makes perfect sense. And again, if anything, the scandal is on the opposite side because they saw that these guys aren't social welfare groups, but they gave them the categorization of social welfare groups anyway. So that's the scandal. The scandal is they weren't hard enough on them, but the conservatives made it seem like, no, the scandal is they were too hard on them. So here's your real IRS scandal. Apparently, we're subsidizing white nationalist racist groups. That's a scandal! Scandal! They say, quote, the Council of Conservative Citizens explains on its website that its members believe that the American people and government should remain European in their composition and character. We also oppose all efforts to mix the races of mankind. You paid for this group. It came out of your tax dollars. This group is subsidized. This group is subsidized. I'm speechless. It doesn't happen often on a talk show, on secular talk, but this got me there. The Daily Beast says, groups that espouse hate can be stripped of their tax-exempt status. Owens, who ran the IRS's Exempt Organizations Division in the 1990s, that happened to the neo-Nazi group National Alliance in 1982. Okay, pause again to reflect on this. This is mentioned in the Daily Beast article as if, oh, good, we fixed this problem before. But my takeaway from that is the opposite. There was a point in time in the 1980s when we were subsidizing neo-Nazi groups too. So it's not just white nationalist groups, which maybe are slightly less bad, because at least they try to cover their racism a little bit more, although not really. But the neo-Nazi groups, they were also tax-exempt status. Here, subsidy for you. Quote, Republicans in Congress have made it virtually impossible for the IRS to revoke the tax-exempt status of political groups after the recent so-called Tea Party scandal. Republicans criticized the IRS for what they said was inexcusable targeting of conservative 501c4s. The irony is overwhelming. We might not be able to strip this white nationalist racist group of tax-exempt status. We might have to continue to subsidize them because the Republicans are blocking it because of the previous non-existent IRS scandal. And then people are going to have the nerve. They're going to have the nerve to try to say, well, I mean, racism, it's equal in both parties. Or why would you say there's a link between the Republican Party and these white nationalists? How dare you generalize in such a gross way? I'm giving you facts. There's no generalization here at all. I'm giving you facts. How about the other facts that we learned, too? That the leader of the conservative, the CCC, by the way, again, what does that sound like? KKK. That was on purpose. That was on purpose they did that. The leader of the group donated to Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and a bunch of other candidates. Now, to their credit, a lot of them gave the money back. But there's an article out today talking about Rand Paul specifically, how in 2010 he was asked to give the money back, and he said, no, I'm not going to give it back. Now that there's the big scandal and there's the terrorist attack associated with it, he's like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't even know. Here, take the money. Oh, my God, man. They get mad at Obama when Obama knows a Palestinian professor, not a terrorist, not a Hamas sympathizer, none of that whatsoever. They get mad that he knows somebody who happens to be Palestinian. They go, terrorist connection, terrorist, 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 pals around with terrorists, pals around with terrorists. Some Republicans literally get funding from a group called the CCC, an offshoot of the KKK, that came about to oppose desegregation. They take money from that group, money from that group. We give them tax-exempt status. And they go, no connection here, none whatsoever. If you don't see a systemic problem here, you just don't know the facts. It's that simple. All right, now, we go to Morning Joe. Cue up my clip here. Believe it or not, Morning Joe actually had a good debate on the issue of Confederate products being pulled from stores. I'm not saying that in a joking way, as I've done before. In the past, I've said, like, Morning Joe gets substantive or something to that effect, and then I put some stupid verbal diarrhea segment that they had, which makes no sense. This, I'm actually being serious. So you're going to see neocon Bill Kristol versus John Heilman here on this issue. Let's watch, and then I'm going to give you a breakdown. And the breakdown is a little more nuanced than you might think watching the back and forth. So watching the back and forth, you're going to be like, oh, 100% Heilman. I don't want to give away too much now, but it's more like 80% Heilman, and I'll explain in detail what I'm talking about after you listen to it.
So if I understand your ideology correctly, you're a big fan of the free market, right? And that companies should make decisions in their rational self-interest about what they should and shouldn't sell. I don't really think it's really if Amazon or Walmart decided it's in their business interest not to sell any given product, they should not sell it, correct?
They can do whatever they want under massive.
Right. So let's leave it at that.
Well, let's not leave
that.
That's
what
let's not leave
they're responding
that.
To. I think if I understand your ideology correctly, you're a big fan of the free market, right? And that.
All right, double for
leave
a
it at that. Well, let's.
My bad, it doubled there. Here we go.
They're responding to the market, Bill.
And I'm allowed to have an opinion.
Yes, you are.
It's a pathetic catering to political correctness under pressure.
Or what others would call market forces.
Yeah. Fine, okay. But are you willing to let others sell it?
I'm willing to let them sell anything they want to sell. I'm just saying there's no reason to criticize Amazon and Walmart.
If they pull books written by Karl Marx. Karl Marx inspired the murder of tens of millions of people in the 20th century. Yeah. Amazon said, we're not selling anything by Karl Marx, because you know what? A lot of communists have read Karl Marx and murdered people. Yeah. I think that would be a mistake. I would criticize Amazon for that. That shocked you? Oh, my God, you can't criticize a private company.
John Heilman. Again, I'm not saying you can't criticize anybody. Bill, you're free to criticize anybody you want. I'm just trying to say it's inconsistent with the view. If these companies have made a decision that
do you think they should sell the memoirs of Jefferson Davis?
Certainly.
Okay.
Undoubtedly. And so do I believe most people on the left think that there's no problem, that no one on the left that I know of is talking about banning the teaching of the second inaugural, nor is anybody talking about tearing down the monuments at Gettysburg. No one's talking about any of those things. Literally, I know of no one. This is the classic exercise in straw man building and then knocking down. I know it's fun for you, and you are trolling by doing these things, because no one on the left is suggesting any of the things you're suggesting.
If I've gotten people to say that no one on the left should suggest these things, that's a good thing. Because there was a kind of frenzy, and there is a kind of frenzy on the left.
I'm pretty sure the left is respectful
of the efforts of Americans who fought for the Confederacy.
I'm pretty sure the left probably came to those views without your help, but I'm sure that it's good for you to be making those arguments.
There's a lot of...
Okay, that part at the end is the most maddening part, where Bill Kristol's like, you know, there's this thing on the left where they're trying to expunge all the respect for the Americans who fought in the Confederacy. Yeah! As there should be! The Confederacy tried to secede, to preserve slavery. There should have never been any respect for them in the first place. So yeah, the left is on that side. You know who else is on that side? All sane people in America. A lot of people who live in the South are on that side. Moderates are on that side. Independents are on that side. Because people look at that and they see it objectively, Bill, unlike you. They look at people who fought for the Confederacy, they see what the Confederacy stood for, and they go, yeah, that's not right. That is wrong. Those people were wrong in their ideology. They were on the wrong side of history and the wrong side of morality. Bill Kristol's like, I don't know why they're trying to take away the respect of the Confederates who died trying to preserve slavery. Because they were trying to fucking preserve slavery, you idiot! Okay, so on that point, clearly, Bill Kristol's wrong, Heilman's right. The other part where Heilman's totally right is where he talks about the free market hypocrisy of Bill Kristol. Anytime there's a company that makes a decision that Republicans like, Bill Kristol's out there saying, liberals can't complain, because free market. Yeah, they have a right to make whatever decision they want as a company to sell whatever they want and not sell whatever they want, so you can't criticize them. Because what you think of what they're doing is irrelevant, because they have the right in a free market to, whatever, stop selling Karl Marx, for example, just to give a made-up example here. So there are times in the past where Bill Kristol has defaulted to free market, free market, free market. But now that, you know, Amazon, eBay, Walmart, all these different stores are saying we're no longer going to sell Confederate flags, what does he do? All of a sudden, the free market consideration's out the window. He's like, why would you stop selling it? What happened to free market, big guy? They are companies that are free to make their own decision. They don't want to sell Confederate flags anymore, so they said we're not going to sell Confederate flags or Confederate products anymore. I thought you loved the free market. I thought you believed in capitalism. I thought they could make their own decisions. Now, all of a sudden, you don't want to let them make their own decisions because it disagrees with your ideology. So clearly, Heilman's right about that as well. Here's where it gets murky, though. And here's why I said Heilman's only 80% right. Because I actually agree with Bill Kristol that there shouldn't be anybody going after the selling of Confederate products to individuals. So like I tried to make clear yesterday when discussing this issue, we live in a free country, guys. So if on your own property, on your own car, on your person, which is always a funny phrase, I thought, if you want to put a Confederate flag there, so Confederate bumper sticker, Confederate fucking blanket or bathing suit, put it on your property, if you want to put it there, totally fine with that. You have the First Amendment right to do that. And in fact, I like it because it shows me where the idiots are. By the same token, if somebody wants to fly a fucking Nazi flag, great! I know to avoid your punk ass, and I know you're a bad person. I was able to learn it up front as opposed to having to talk to you, and then you say something like, you know those damn Jews, huh? So there's nothing wrong with that. In a free country, yeah, I personally believe they're allowed to make the decision. Those companies are allowed to make the decision to stop selling the Confederate flag. But do I think it's a good decision? No, because then it is a slippery slope. You know, if for some reason somebody somewhere did a terrorist attack in the name of communism and they're a far lefty, well, then are they going to say no more Karl Marx books? I own the Communist Manifesto. I actually didn't think it was particularly good, but I own it and I read it. Can you never read anything from Lenin? Can you never read anything from any – and where does it stop? Let's stop selling this political ideology and that political ideology. Let's stop for historical purposes. We did the story the other day about Hitler's painting selling. Why should you ban that? I don't see any reason why you should ban that. I mean, again, in a free society, even things that are grotesque, you must allow people to have the freedom to, you know, buy those things, wave those flags, believe those things. And he's right about that. Bill Kristol's right about that. But where he's wrong is there is very few people on the left calling for an actual banning of the Confederate flag. What we want is, and we are right to want this, take it down from the fucking state house. That's public property, son. You have black people in South Carolina paying their taxes, funding the state capitol, and at the state capitol is the symbol of their fucking great-grandfathers being in chains as slaves. That's the problem. The problem is when it's tax-funded. That's the problem. Okay, so, like I said, Heilman's 80% right. The only little area where Bill Kristol is right is if it were to get to the point where people are saying, no, seriously, like, stop selling it in stores everywhere and ban it, well, then no, that's a problem. Because then you have to ban Mein Kampf. And like you said, for historical reasons, you might want to read Mein Kampf to see the mind of a fucking crazy person. You're going to have to ban anything that offends anybody for any reason. And that's a slippery slope. So, again, the overall takeaway is, if it's public property and tax dollars are funding it, take down the Confederate flag right now and apologize. How about that? If it's private, you know, you have to allow the freedom for them to sell it and for people to buy it and for people to broadcast their own ignorance. And maybe this increases my vulnerability. I don't know. But if I was the head of a, you know, if I was calling the shots at Amazon or eBay or all these other things, I wouldn't stop selling the Confederate flag. And they are doing it to kind of hop on a PC bandwagon here and say, yeah, no, we're with everybody who wants to get rid of it. But you're missing the point. The people are saying get rid of it on state grounds. They're not saying you should stop selling it. Nobody's going to say if you don't stop selling it, look at those bad guys. They're bad guys because they're selling it. Nobody's going to think that. So in that tiny respect, Crystal's right, because they are being like overly sensitive and doing something that nobody even asked for. Okay. See, man, we try to be as open-minded as possible here. All right, now let's go to Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly weighed in on the issue of the Confederate flag, and he gave us a classic case of false equivalence.
You say the Confederate flag is a symbol of hate, and you believe that.
That's the way I feel when I see it.
Okay, okay. And absolutely 100% legitimate. For some other people who see it in a historical context.
What's the historical context?
It represents bravery.
Oh, get out of town.
Bravery,
they put it up in anger when they were trying to mass resist the civil rights movement in the 60s.
You know as well as I do that it represents to some bravery in the Civil War because the Confederates fought hard.
That wasn't the Civil War. That
wasn't
the Confederate flag.
An issue of government endorsement. That's the issue.
But that's what it represents. You're right, historically.
Okay.
But in their minds, that's what it represents. And in your mind, it represents hate. So, and everybody should know what the two sides are believing.
That's what you're...
All right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
That's my job.
Gotta know both sides. It's a 50-50 thing. This side thinks this. This side thinks that. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to be, you know, fair. I'm Bill O'Reilly. I'm totally fair in all circumstances, always. Okay, so, since Bill O'Reilly, 50-50, got to know both sides. This is what they think, this is what you think. Yeah, it's fair. Got to know both sides. Okay, so Bill did that. You know, when Hamas, for example, flies their flag and they talk about death to the Jews, O'Reilly makes sure that he comes out there and he says, okay, to you it represents... anti-Semitism and terrorism and whatnot, but to them it represents bravery against the occupiers. Right? Bill said that, right? Or did I miss that episode? How about when ISIS flies their flag, you know, he says, well, to you, sure, it represents terrorism, but you have to understand that to disaffected Sunni populations around the world, it represents bravery and it represents freedom fighters. Both sides. You got to teach both sides, right, Bill? I mean, that's what we're here to do. We're here to do. How about when an old Japanese guy, for example, flies the flag of the emperor, the flag of the Japanese Empire? Well, you know, it might symbolize the bombing of Pearl Harbor and the slaughter of the Chinese, for example, to you, but to them it represents the good old days and it represents the bravery of their fathers and their grandfathers, right? Okay. Now, why is it? It's strange, right? Why is it that Bill O'Reilly, only when it's a neo-Confederate white supremacist terrorist using his symbol, why is it that all of a sudden when it's that symbol, well, now it's more complicated? You know, when it's the ISIS flag, when it's the Hamas flag, when it's anybody else, well, it's bad, wrong, terrible, evil, horrendous. But when it's a Confederate flag, okay, both sides. Let's be open-minded here. They think this, you think that. That is what it is. Wash your hands of it, right? Why is he doing that? Because when the extremist and the terrorist is somebody who is of an ideology that is related to your ideology, to be specific here, conservatism, Bill O'Reilly being conservative, this guy being ultra-conservative, way far right, way further to the right of Bill O'Reilly, but again, related in terms of it's on his side of the political spectrum, when that's the case, well, then you're able to see, oh, now I'm going to look for the shades of gray and the excuses and the rationalizations and this and that. Well, it's funny how when it comes to any other group, they're just bad people. They're just evil. It's representative. That flag, tear it down, horrendous. But it's more complicated when it's the Confederate flag. No, see, this is what we call a lack of objectivity. And this is what Bill O'Reilly demonstrates on a nightly basis. Okay. Let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break. Fundamentalist radio host Brian Fisher weighed in on the Confederate flag debate, and the direction he went in is totally predictable.
Are going to remove symbols of oppression from our culture, if we come to the point where we say, hey, any flag that represents bigotry, any flag that represents hatred, any flag that represents slavery or oppression needs to be removed, then I want to suggest to you that the next flag to go ought to be the rainbow flag of the gay Reich. The rainbow flag represents the homosexual lobby. It represents big gay. It represents what I'm calling for the first time today. I'm introducing a new term, the gay Reich. They've got a flag, just like the Nazis had their flag. Again, I'm not saying that they're Nazis. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the Nazis had a flag. The Confederates have a flag. The United States has a flag. And the gay lobby, big gay, the gay Gestapo, they've got a flag, and it's the rainbow flag. And I'm suggesting to you that that flag is a symbol of slavery and oppression and bigotry and prejudice and bias. So if we're going to go after symbols of oppression, we ought to make the rainbow flag the next target for removal in our culture.
Just come out of the closet already, man. Come on, you know you want to. Grab that baby oil, slap on the maskless chaps, and get to it. You know you want to be out there. It's raining men. Hallelujah, it's raining men. And Brian Fisher would just dive into a swimming pool of cocks. Just slap himself in the face. Oh, dicks, more dicks. I need dicks. Oh, it's so obvious. It's so obvious. There's never been anything in the history of mankind that is more obvious that Brian Fisher is dying. Is dying inside because he's like, all I want to do is touch men, but I can't because I believe in religion and I'm a fundamentalist and blah, blah, blah. Oh. He said, if we are going to remove symbols of oppression and bigotry, we have to remove the gay flag. He even said slavery! The gay flag is a symbol of slavery. Yeah, what was the name of that nation, that gay nation which had slavery? I forget the name of it. What was it again, Brian? Homosexuistan? Is that what it was? They were well known for slavery, of course. It doesn't represent bigotry or oppression, you idiot. It represents liberation. It represents an oppressed group that's standing up for their rights to be treated equally. Equally. That's it. That's it. No, in his backwards mind, he goes, I'm not comparing this to the Nazi flag. And then he just goes on to compare it to the Nazi flag. And he's saying it represents bigotry and oppression and slavery. The gay Reich. It's the gay Reich is what it is. Big gay. How does he not realize how silly that sounds? Big gay. I'm really opposed to big gay. Unless it's a muscular guy named Sven who lays on top of me and he's all big and he lays the pipe right. The gay Gestapo. This guy literally has had a guy on his show that said the Holocaust and the Nazis, they were gay. I'm not kidding! You think I'm kidding? You think I'm fucking kidding? I'm not kidding! Look it up! I think the name of the book is like The Pink Swastika or something like that. They can't get out of their minds, man. They can't get out of their minds. No, that flag represents something positive. That flag doesn't put anybody down, doesn't represent slavery, doesn't represent bigotry, doesn't represent oppression. You just think it does, because you view the world as, if anybody tries to take away my right as a Christian to take away everybody else's rights, well, then they're the ones that are taking away rights. No, no, no. But see, the thing is, you don't have a right to take away other people's rights. You think you do, but you do not. So again, I repeat myself, what they're fighting for is equality and justice, and what you're fighting for is to continue to have your group, the fundamentalist Christians, be oppressors. So let's remember that. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Michael Savage has another group to blame for the terrorist attack, and then later on in the show, gender roles, what makes people cling to them more? All right, stay right there, guys.
Yeah. You know what? I like to play. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play that. Play on, play that. Yo, train trumps in verse. It's going on.
down, face of Black Street. The homies got at me, collab creations, bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, that dog couldn't catch me. Every superstar with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet, giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Black Street and Teddy, the original Rump Shaker.
Down, good lord. Baby got him open all over town. Strict and bitch, you don't play around. Cover much ground, got game by the town. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind.
Wow.
I think about the girl all the time.
Wow.
East side to the west side. Pushing fat rides, getting no surprise. She got tricks in the stash, stacking up the cash, fast when it comes to the gas. By no means average, it's on when she's got to have it. Baby, you're a perfect 10, I wanna get in, can I get down low? I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it,
no diggity,
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
She's got class and style. She knowledge by the time. Baby never act wild. Very low key on the profile. Catching feelings is a no. Let me tell you how it goes. Curves the words, spins the verb. Loving it curves so frequent for her. Rolling with the fatness, you don't even know what the half is. You've got to pay to play, just for shorty bang bang to look your way. I like the way you work it, jump tight all day, every day. You're blowing my mind, maybe in time, baby, I can get you in.
Bitch. All right, we're back. Ultra-conservative radio host Michael Savage knows who to blame for the neo-Confederate white supremacist terrorism in Charleston. And shocker, it's not racists and neo-Confederates.
Christians killed in the United States of America in a church. Not in Syria, not in Iraq, but in the United States of America in 2015. To me, it's an act of terrorism. I know many of you don't want to hear that because you've come to think that only Muslims can commit terror, which is largely true around the world. But here we have an atheist committing an act of terror.
Huh?
A brainwashed atheist, an atheist whose soul was destroyed in the public schools, destroyed by the American Medical Association.
What?
An atheist whose soul was annihilated by drugs, drug-related offenses, dropped in and out of school. This child was raised without Christian values. He was raised with no values whatsoever. He was raised on the liberal credo, the credo of Obama and Hillary Clinton.
He just blamed liberals and atheists. Now, believe it or not, I've heard the atheism thing before. And when I heard it read, I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Like, well, he was an atheist. And? So that's like, you know, like if a Muslim robs a liquor store and ends up killing the guy in the process, do you say, ah, Islamic terrorism? But that had nothing to do with the an ideology. That had nothing to do with the religion. He just happened to be Muslim and he did that crime. By the same token, this guy was not out there saying, I can't convert these Christians into atheists. I must kill them. I must kill them. He was crystal clear in his manifesto where he tells you why he's doing it. He's saying the blacks are taking over and they're raping everybody and they're murdering everybody, and I believe in white supremacy, I believe in apartheid, I believe in Rhodesia, I believe in the Confederacy, I want to bring the Confederacy back,
I am a racist. I am doing it for white supremacist motivations. That's why I'm doing it. But even with all the guy literally saying exactly why he did it, you have people like Michael Savage. Oh, must be the atheists. Right, the atheists and the liberals. Liberals are to blame for this. Liberals. The people who are on the opposite side of the political spectrum could not be more opposite for everything that this guy stood for. Obama and Hillary Clinton are to blame. You blamed Obama and Hillary Clinton for this. At what point do we say that these guys are just, they really are just special needs? Because Michael Savage, dude, the guy laid out for you exactly why he did it, and the reason he did it was an ultra-right-wing, neo-Confederate, white supremacist ideology. But you can't acknowledge that. And why can't you acknowledge that? Again, because your ideology is on that side of the political spectrum, so no, never, can there, never, nobody on my side of the political spectrum could ever do anything wrong, ever. So we're just going to blame the liberals when it's clearly an ultra-conservative, white supremacist terrorist who did this. How sad is that? Because, you know, it shows how insecure they are. It shows how insecure they are. Now, look, there was a situation probably a year and a half ago or so where there was somebody who did a shooting at a Planned Parenthood place. And the guy said, like, he gave, like, a liberal, you know, manifesto or talking points, and he said, here's why I'm doing it. And liberals came out, and they were like, okay, no, stop, stop, stop. You can't do that. Don't do that. We're disavowing you. You think that, you know, what you're doing is the right thing, but it's not the right thing. And liberals basically owned up and said, stop, not on our watch. That's not what we believe in. If there's some sort of far-left communist terrorist, we accept it, and we're like, okay, stop, stop. With this guy, what does he do? He can't even bring himself to say that. He has to point the finger at the other side. But why can't you just say, okay, yes, you know, I don't believe in what this guy believes in. He's way further to the right, but his ideology being an ultra-conservative, white supremacist, neo-Confederate ideology, that's disturbing to me. And we, you know, I don't like this. Couldn't bring himself to do it. Has to point the finger at everybody else. Atheist, atheist, atheist. Right, because, you know, Dylan Roof was an avid listener to Neil deGrasse Tyson podcast, and I heard he just loved Richard Dawkins. He's really big into medicine. That's what he was really planning on, you know, busting out of there and looking into treatments for cervical cancer. That's what he's all about. No matter what, they have to default to, they have to revert to their talking points because they don't have any connection to empirical reality. So it's immediately, other side, point the finger, blame the other side. All right, man. Well, now we know there's absolutely nothing that could ever happen, ever, that would make you say, you know what, that's our side, and fuck that guy. Nothing can make you say that, because the guy said clearly, white supremacy, neo-Confederate, Rhodesia, apartheid, fuck black people, I'm conservative, yada yada. He's like, no, you're liberal. That's what you are. You're liberal. All right. Let's go to I got one more on this or two? Hold on. I'm trying to figure out which one to go to next. Yeah, okay. I got one more, another radio host being a dick weasel. Radio host Michael Berry is going to use the white supremacist terror attack in Charleston to claim that Muslims in America get favorable treatment.
If the young man whose name I will not say, who shot and killed 9 people, an awful, awful thing to do. If hypothetically he had instead been, which is far more likely, a Muslim, and if he had done so with the Quran in his left hand and a pistol in his right, if he had screamed Allah Akbar, as Nadal Hassan did, would we outlaw the Quran? Would we outlaw the mosque? Would we outlaw the prayer room? Would we rush to avoid all Muslims? No, of course we wouldn't. Your call is coming up next.
Okay, first of all, literally nobody, nobody called for the Confederate flag to be banned. What they're calling for is take it down from the public property of the state capitol in South Carolina. Why? Because taxpayers, including black taxpayers, pay their government. So essentially what you're asking for is for black taxpayers to pay for the symbol of their grandparents, great-grandparents, and great-great-grandparents' enslavement. Pay for that, and we'll fly it. Thanks for giving us money. Now we're going to remind you that your ancestors were enslaved. So that's what they're calling for. Take it down from public land, public property. And they're right to do that. Nobody, nobody has said ban it outright. And you can't in America. We have the First Amendment. We have freedom of speech, freedom of expression. Can't do it. Can't do it. So already he's wrong because nobody's calling for what he thinks they're calling for. So, but we could, you know, pack it up and move along now because the guy's entire premise is bullshit. But second of all, yes, people on the right have called for banning the Quran and mosques in America. And they gratuitously also do Sharia law bans in many red states. And I say gratuitously because it's already banned. It's already banned. So when they do it, that's just their way of saying, an extra fuck you. That's what I won't say to you. So it's already banned, son. But they do it anyway because they want to put up their middle finger to Muslim Americans. And furthermore, he says in America, Muslims are a bigger terror threat. Well, that's not true. The Department of Homeland Security says the exact opposite, and the statistics prove that. And so the idea that Muslims get special treatment, don't make me laugh. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, quote, attacks on Muslims after 9/11 skyrocketed some 1,600%, and as recently as 2010, some 160 anti-Muslim hate crimes were committed. And that doesn't even include the hate crimes against Hindus and Sikhs who people thought were Muslim. So the bigots can't even get the object of their hatred correct, not surprisingly, because they're dumbasses. And finally, as Media Matters explains here, quote, Berry himself, so this radio host, was opposed to the building of a mosque near the World Trade Center site and said that if it were built, he hopes somebody blows it up. But like he said, well, it's much more likely that fucking these Muslims, they're the terrorists. That's always much more likely. You said yourself, if they build the Ground Zero Mosque, which, by the way, wasn't on Ground Zero and wasn't a mosque, but if they build that, I hope somebody blows it up. You called for not building it, as you just argued. Would anybody call for not building mosques after a Muslim terrorist attack? Yes, and it's you would do it, and you did it. You did it already. Show these guys a fucking mirror, man. Everything they say is projection. You know, oh, the Muslims, they're so evil, they're so bad, they're so terrible in every way. I can't believe they do violence as much as they do. Anyway, let's block them from building mosques, and if they build one, blow it up because they're so violent. I'm not sensing any irony in what I'm saying right now because I'm not smart. Okay. All right, now we got to go to, I don't know why I keep losing my order here, but there was a, I'm looking for that immigration story. Oh, here it is. Okay, sorry. I didn't want to miss that because it's actually a really good story, the one that I kind of faked you out on earlier today. There's a new study out in the Journal of General Internal Medicine conducted by researchers at Harvard Medical School and Hunter College, and it looked into whether or not immigrants exploit the healthcare system in America. Now, conservatives tell us yes, but the reality is not only no, but in fact the numbers show the opposite, the healthcare system in America. So let me explain. They say, quote, undocumented immigrants contributed $2.2 and $3.8 billion more than they withdrew annually between 2000 and 2011 to a Medicare program known as the Hospital Insurance Trust Fund. The total contribution of their surplus was $35.1 billion. Unauthorized immigrants generated an average surplus of $316 per capita to the trust fund, while other Americans generated a deficit of $106 per capita. So if anything, the real moochers, the real leeches, the real parasites on the system, the people who are operating it in the red, would be all of the people that are not undocumented immigrants. So everybody else in America, all those good stand-up American citizens, man. Well, you guys are sucking more money out of the system while the undocumented immigrants are paying into the system. So the next logical question is, why is that? They go on to explain, undocumented immigrants contribute the most to the hospital insurance trust fund since they pay taxes with the jobs they have, sometimes on a borrowed or invalid Social Security number. Some immigrants also have valid Social Security numbers through the DACA program, which blocks deportation for some people, and contribute into Social Security taxes. Meanwhile, they typically don't benefit from the program. A law in 1996 imposed restrictions that barred undocumented immigrants from accessing Medicare benefits. While they can collect on Medicare if they ever legalize, about one-third of undocumented immigrants leave the U.S. So, in other words, they pay in, and they pay in a tremendous amount, but many of them don't get the benefits. And let's be clear, it also works like this with other government programs, too, which is why it's so hilarious when a dumbass like Ann Coulter is like, oh, the immigrants come here, they just want our welfare. Well, did you know that they can't get welfare if they're undocumented immigrants? See how that works out for you. Go into a government office when you're not an American citizen, you just crossed the border, go into the office and say, can I have money, please? I'll fill out the paperwork where I need to put my Social Security number. I'll fucking wing it and see how it goes. It doesn't work like that. There are severe restrictions for social safety net programs for undocumented immigrants. Obviously. And again, because of the reasons I just explained, in some circumstances, they pay a lot into the system. They don't take that much out of the system. So they're running a surplus. So they're propping it up for everybody else. So you know what this does? And this is why this story is so important. It just busts up the stereotype of like, you know how they are. Them lazy Hispanics come into the country and they just take our money and screw us over. That's not true. It's just not true. And Vice did a great report on this recently where they said the jobs that a lot of undocumented immigrants are doing, it's not just a myth that Americans don't do them and don't want to do them. There was a conservative town that essentially deported all of their undocumented immigrants, and then they didn't have anybody to fill the fucking positions. And then when white people came and tried, they couldn't do it. They could. And look, you might, oh, that's unfair to say that. It's not me saying it. It's the fucking Vice documentary that proved it. They documented it. They showed it. It's there. You can go watch it yourself, okay? It was on HBO not too long ago. It's probably online now. So the idea that they're taking all the government benefits, they're not. They're net paying into it, okay? So they're keeping it afloat. And the idea that they're taking the jobs that you want, they're not. So if anything, the stereotype should be the opposite. The stereotype's like, oh, just like that Key and Peele skit where it's rednecks drinking non-alcoholic beer and they're talking about different groups of people and they say nothing but positive things. Yeah, it's like, you know how them Hispanics are. Hard working. They come in this country, they bust their ass for little pay, they keep up the social safety net, do jobs Americans don't want to do. Those are some good people there. Those are some good people. That stereotype turns out to actually be true. All the ones that conservatives think are true are bullshit, and that's a fact. Now, let's move along to a story I've been trying to get to for the past 2 days, but haven't had time. An article in the Associated Press last week highlights a dangerous trend in the Middle East and North Africa where diabetic Muslims fast for Ramadan against the orders of their doctors. They say, quote, the Middle East and North Africa, which are overwhelmingly Muslim, have the world's highest comparative prevalence of diabetes, according to the International Diabetes Federation. In 2014, some 38 million people in the region, or 1 in 10, were diabetics, a figure expected to double in a generation, the Federation says. Another 18 million suspected sufferers have yet to be diagnosed. Despite the hardships, compliance with Ramadan rules is widespread. Those who don't fast usually eat and drink in seclusion out of respect. In this climate, devout Muslims with diabetes say it's very difficult to be the odd one out. All right, so they're laying the groundwork here, and they're setting up the picture for you. The reality is a lot of Muslims in this region, they're devout, and they're followers of their religion, and some of the aspects of their religion are basically against their well-being. They need to eat. They're diabetics. They have to take care of themselves, but they say, no, I'm going to pick my religion in many circumstances over the empirical reality that I'm putting myself in danger. So they go on to tell some personal stories. Quote, Al-Khalili said he was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes 30 years ago and kept fasting. About 10 years ago, doctors told him he had to stop, but he wouldn't. He kept ignoring his doctors even after his left toe was amputated 4 years ago. Finally, 2 years ago, he stopped fasting. Now, some go even further. Quote, Nayel Naibot, forgive me if I butchered that, 65 years old, has failed to manage his diabetes since being diagnosed in 1982. He has lost most of his sight and is bedridden with one leg amputated above the knee. Still, he says he'll fast again this year despite the risks. He said, quote, God will protect us, said the retired civil servant who lives with his 60-year-old wife, Nofa, who's also diabetic, in the southern Jordanian town of Karak. I will not violate the fast even if I die. Okay. Yet again, this is the problem with people who get to the point where they are totally, utterly, 100% convinced that their faith is fact. When they're convinced of that, then it becomes an easy choice to say, I will sacrifice my personal health for the greater good of abiding by my religion, because as long as I abide by my religion, in the next life, everything will be hunky-dory, and God won't be mad at me, and I'll get everything that's promised to me. So this is what happens when people actually believe the bullshit that comes along with religion and the rituals that go along with religion. That's not to say that religion doesn't do good things. In some cases, it absolutely does good things. But the problem is, suspending reason always has tremendously negative consequences. When you say, I'm not going to think, I'm going to blindly follow this ritual because that's what I do, well, then you're setting yourself up for disaster. And it can get to the point where you had your fucking leg amputated, you can't see, you're a diabetic, and you say, I'd rather die because then I'm still, you know, falling in line with my religion. Well, I hate to tell you, but your religion is untrue. You're not helping yourself. You're not helping anybody. What you're doing is you're damning yourself to a short rest of your life in misery because you believe in stuff that is factually incorrect. I don't want people to have to suffer through that. People call me a bad guy, but what I'm doing, I read this and I want to try to help people and educate people and get them to the point where they say it is a crazy idea to continue to do that as opposed to treating my illness. You should treat your illness. Treat it, and then you can live more, you can live a longer life on this earth, happy and healthy, which is preferable than sacrificing your mind to dogmatism and not getting any payoff for it. Okay, and finally, last story of the day. There's a new study published in the Journal of Social Psychology from researchers from the University of Washington. And it's about gender roles, and their findings are both sad and incredibly predictable. So what they did is they had men squeeze some sort of a device that tests how strong they are. And actually, I'm not even sure it does that, but what they do is they'd give them a score which indicates how strong their grip pressure is, and they'd make it up, and they admit that they're making it up. But they squeeze something, and then somebody will tell them, okay, you rank this high on the masculinity scale. Either you're really masculine, you're average, or you're feminine in your strength. And after they did that, they then ask a bunch of questions like, how many people have you slept with? What kind of products do you use? How tall are you? And things like that. And they found that when they told a man his strength was average or very masculine, he'd be comfortable enough to not inflate the answers in all the other questions. But if they told the man that he has feminine strength, he'd end up saying, when he's answering the questions, he'd end up saying that he's taller than he is, He'd end up saying that he uses like various really masculine products, and he'd say that, you know, he's slept with a lot of women, totally. Whereas again, with the other guys, if they said you have average strength or very masculine strength, they'd be super honest, you know, and they'd tell their real height, and they wouldn't like inflate the things for the other questions. So the conclusion that they take away from this is. And actually, I should pause before I give you that and say the same. They said the same thing happened with women, with if they were feminine or not. How if they tested more masculine, they tried to seem more feminine in the answers to the questions. So it works with both genders. And the idea is, the conclusion is overcompensation. It's oftentimes what we see with like the anti-gay people. They're to act outwardly so anti-gay because deep down they feel like they're gay. So what you see here is, you know, people are like, oh, you're questioning my masculinity? No, I'm super masculine. And I'll tell you how masculine I am. I had sex with like 8 zillion women, and I'm like 7'3". How about that? And again, it's predictable, but it's also sad. Because you know what annoys me about it? It's like people are assuming that there's an ideal, and the ideal is more masculine, more feminine. But why wouldn't the ideal just be, for you, whatever you are naturally? It's not like, what, there's nobody out there that wants to fuck you? There's nobody out there that likes you? There's nobody out there that's going to spend time with you? Of course there is! And if you don't have that person or that thing going on right now, at some point you will. You can if you want to. You know? So I find it comical because it's like, it's like something is hardwired in us at some level, or maybe not even, like, pumped into our heads by our parents and maybe society. This is the ideal, and you got to strive to this ideal, and if you don't reach this ideal, it's a flaw with you. No, but why can't the flaw just be the bullshit ideal itself? You know, if some guy's somewhat feminine and some guy is more masculine, so be it. If some woman is more masculine and some more feminine, who cares? I don't care, and I don't think other people care. I think people think that other people care because they might even be just way too narcissistic. Like what? Other people are going to give a fuck if you scored average or really masculine on your strength test? I got news for you. Whoop-de-frickin-do. Nobody cares. So, and again, this actually leads into a much broader conversation. We don't have the time to have it right now, but the conversation is, where does that really come from? I just kind of alluded to it before. Is it hardwired? Is it like DNA? Is it genetic? Is it men, because of evolution, saying, I got to appear more masculine to mate? So is it like biological? Or is it more cultural-based and like from our parents and society trying to put certain ideas and roles onto us, and then we just kind of adopt them because everybody else around them is adopting them? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not convinced on this issue one way or the other. But either way, I find this predictable and fairly sad because I know it sounds cliche and corny, but I think it's true. The best version of you is the one that's just being you, not the one that's pretending I'm more masculine or I'm more feminine. Because you can't keep that charade up too long anyway, because the true you is going to show eventually when you stop caring as much what other people think. Okay. That was fun. All right, we're out of time, man. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You can follow me on Twitter, @Kyle Kalinske. The Facebook page is facebook.com/secular talk. Give us a little like over there. YouTube page is youtube.com/secular talk. You can sub over there if you haven't yet. I don't know how many of you guys haven't, if there's any new listeners. Hey, how you doing? Sub over there. Appreciate it. You can follow Lilith Penn. She's the great social media manager for Secular Talk, @StardustLilith on Twitter. She does a great job. She's probably over there in the chat right now, although I can't see if she is. But anyway, love you guys. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good night. Peace.